All right, welcome back to the Anchor Drop Podcast. I'm here with Tim. Hey, Tim.
Good morning.
And we are continuing on in Genesis. We're into our second piece of Genesis. And this is going to be... Are we covering just three verses?
Think so.
Three verses. We're in Genesis chapter 1, verses 6, 7, and 8. Tim, you want to give us a runway here?
A little context. Review of the preceding five verses. So we're starting at the beginning. And what we have so far is God makes the earth. It's formless. It's void. The Spirit of God hovers over the primordial waters of the creation. And then God speaks. This is in sharp distinction to almost every creation myth you can find anywhere. In that there's almost always some kind of slaughter that precipitates the creation of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're murdering a god and making it out of its dead body or what have you. Here, God calls matter into existence and then starts talking.
Mm.
And so there's not slaughter. There's not struggle among the gods. There's not struggle in death. It's art. It's God is making a sculpture. God is making a mixed media piece. And the first thing God calls the studio into existence and then says lights. And the lights come on. And we don't even know where the lights are coming from yet, because we're not going to sort of concentrate that until day four, but we have lights. We have day and night. And then we roll into day two.
All right, and here we are in day two, starting verse 6. Then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. All right, let's just take this just a little bite at a time. We start with, then God said, and you already spoke to this a little bit, Tim, but can you talk a little bit more about God speaking things into existence and how that pattern plays out here in the creation narrative, especially here in verse 6?
One of the really short, when people are trying to get their head around who God is. Of course, you'll spend the rest of your life on this and not exhaust it. But one of the nice short ones is God is the one who speaks and it is.
Yeah.
Which becomes really potent when you, so take what you learn from what God speaking means here in Genesis 1. Now throw it down the hallways of scripture all the way until it, you know, bumps to a landing in the back end of Romans 8. Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. God has declared you righteous. And God is the one who, when he says, let there be light, there's light.
Yeah.
And that means you are righteous. It's not a legal fiction where God is going to call you righteous, but well, God is the one who speaks and it is. And so throughout the creation, he speaks, it happens.
Yes. All right, God said, and in this case, God says, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. What is a firmament, Tim?
You mean we don't all know? This is not an everyday word?
Well, firm. It sounds firm.
Right.
We can drive a little bit from even the English word here, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Okay, so firmament, I'm stealing your research, so I'm going to throw the question back at you in a minute. But the Hebrew word is rakia, and it means a barrier, right? This is a something placed between something and something else. You'll see some English translations that'll translate it expanse. The translators are not crazy, but that's not actually what the word means. An expanse can be a barrier.
Right.
If I'm, you know, really eager to punch somebody, but they close the door in my face and they're only 2 feet away from me, but I can't get through the door. That's a barrier, right?
Right.
If they start running and now they're a mile away from me, that's a barrier too. I still can't punch them. That's an expanse kind of barrier. But what the word actually means is more the door and less the distance.
Yeah.
So God is making a divider. Is that a fair
translation? Yeah, I think so.
A divider in the midst of the waters. So we have the waters of creation over which the Spirit is hovering. Right? That's our scene. And then God puts a divider of some sort in between, and there's waters above the divider and waters below the divider. By the way, just thing to notice throughout here, there's an up and a down. The Spirit of God hovers over the waters.
Yep.
Not under them. Like, there's an up and a down from God's, you know, God's the only one who's here. So from God's perspective, there's an up and a down.
Right.
And he never says I made up and down, but like none of this is, this language doesn't work unless there's an up and a down.
Right.
So there, God has presupposed an orientation to the universe, and relative to the up and the down, this is a horizontal divider.
Yeah.
There's waters above it. There's waters below it.
Right. Yeah, and Rakia is having done. It's been a few years, but I did a word study on this, and Rakia is typically used. It's only used several times in the New Testament. It's not a common word by any means, but it is used in other. Sorry, I said New Testament. I meant Old Testament. It is used several times in other writings and closely related languages to Hebrew, and the most common use of it is a metal plate that's been beaten flat. It's a solid surface that's being used in construction of something. In this case, like a dome of the sky is like, it's not like the ancient astronomical kind of envision where there's the earth and then some solid thing separating whatever is above it, in this case water, from what's below it, is not too far off. Like that's a dumbed down version of what the universe is, but God is kind of dumbing things down here and he's writing to humans. So a physical barrier between two things, a solid surface, is indeed what's in view here. And this is by the way agreed on by scholars of all varieties, liberals, conservatives, everybody who's done the word study on this goes, yeah, it sounds like a solid piece of metal that's been beaten flat.
Yeah. That's and just what the word means.
It's just what the word means. Yeah. And then this is confirmed in Ezekiel. And we'll read this passage on Sunday. What, now I'm forgetting the chapters. 10. Right here. It's Ezekiel 1 verses 22-26 talks about the firmament using the word Rakia, and Ezekiel has this vision where he goes up and he bumps into this solid, you know, solid surface, and above it is, there's a sea above the surface, and God's throne room is up there, and that's like a perfectly compatible with what's laid out here in Genesis, is that this is a barrier separating something above from something below. And this something above is the dwelling place of God in some sense. And that's something else I want to talk about, is what does that mean? Is God, you know, does God have a throne room that's actually up there in the sky somewhere, or on another planet? What do you think? How are we taking this, Tim?
Well, I'm not going to locate it on another planet. I'm not touching that one.
We're not Mormons.
It's no, as it turns out, it's somewhere. This is a thing that the New Jerusalem comes from somewhere. Maybe so. Frame it in terms of the reading we did at the end of Revelation recently. again, there's an up and a down, right?
Right.
The New Jerusalem comes down. It's coming from somewhere. And in the modern world, we're tempted to think in terms of dimensions. So we've like, is it just really, really far out there such that if we got in a rocket ship and went, it's so far we would never get to it, but it, like in principle, one could.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a matter of, so Satan is wandering around the earth and then in the throne room talking with God about Job and then back on the earth and then back in the throne room, but he's just really, really fast. Or spirits teleport, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Or is it what we would describe as a dimensional thing where it's maybe much, in some way, much closer than that, but completely inaccessible mm-hmm. to us. It's perpendicular to the three dimensions of space is that other world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a fruitful thing to speculate about for exercise. Trains your imagination in the right directions as long as you don't get attached to whatever you come up with,
right?
Because that we're trying to imagine how God made the world on, you know, on things where he didn't quite tell us.
Right.
And based on, I mean, if I sat down and tried to imagine how God made the world on things I can go check, like, might there be a beetle that, well, let's make it even simpler. Let's make it something that we see all the time. Might there be a little critter with eight eyes that like can make string come out of its butt and and weaves that into a net with which it catches flying insects so that it can eat them? I mean, that's pretty, it's a bit of a stretch, Joe. Come on. Right. Only it really exists. And we all have them in our houses and we take brooms and knock the cobwebs out of the corners. You know, that's just the stuff we can check.
Right.
Like when we're talking about the basic structure of the universe and where exactly the throne of God is, it's somewhere. Prophets have seen it. People go there. I don't know. Like, and the truth may be much wilder than anything our physicists are presently imagining.
Right.
In the same way that we look back at Thomas Aquinas dreaming up transubstantiation, which is an Aristotelian view of physics grafted onto trying to explain what Jesus means by this is my body and this is my blood in the Eucharist, right? And we look back on that, and because we've abandoned Aristotle's physics a long time ago, all this looks terribly quaint. Unless you're Catholic, in which case you're stuck with it. The physical structure of the world was much wilder than Aristotle ever imagined. And who says it's not much wilder than we imagine?
Right. Okay, so we have the heavens and the earth, or the waters above this firmament, and we know from Ezekiel there's the up and the down, and heaven is sort of God's dwelling place, and that language is used here. Why is God separating heaven and earth with such a solid barrier? What's he about here?
I mean, this is a little bit of a cop out, but it's also an important observation, so I want to make it, and then we'll move past it. But at this point in the story, we don't know, do we?
We don't know,
right? We know it's originally unformed, unfilled, right?
Yeah.
And this is the beginning of forming it, as we get night and day, and then we get this barrier: waters above, waters below. The waters below are still unformed. And we see that poaching a little bit, but the beginning of day three, the first thing God says on day three is, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not gathered together into one place now.
Right.
We just put the barrier in and they're just kind of all over the place under there.
Right.
So he's dividing. And then as we go, what we're going to find out is that where we live and everything that we know is underneath the barrier.
Yeah.
And there's some, Ezekiel gets to see beyond that barrier.
Uh-huh.
Paul gets caught up. He says, whether in the body or out of the body, he doesn't know, beyond that barrier.
Yeah.
But we don't really have access ordinarily beyond that barrier, except, you know, prophets have seen it, but it's not a thing that you just of an afternoon decide to go beyond that barrier. It doesn't work like that.
Right. Yeah. The setup here is starting to look like God is separating himself from mankind in some sense. We know in Genesis chapter 2 that he's coming down, he's hanging out in the garden, mm-hmm. but even there, there's a where he comes down.
It's one way.
Yeah.
He comes down, we don't go up.
Right.
And one of the signal falls in Genesis, again, poaching on a later chapter, mm-hmm. but let us build a tower whose top is in the heavens.
Yeah.
Like us trying to go up is actually a problem.
Uh-huh.
it doesn't work out well.
Yeah. And barriers between God, here's the first barrier between God and man that we have in, you know, recorded in scripture, this firmament. But barriers between God and man are sort of a thing throughout God in throughout scripture, right?
Yes, and also places where the barrier is permeable somehow. So you can draw near to God
mm-hmm.
at the tabernacle, say.
Yeah.
Right. You can, but only so near.
Right.
You can draw near to the mount before the tabernacle, Israel coming out of Egypt, coming up to Mount Sinai. You know, come near the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but there is a marked border. Come up to the border, yes. Across the border, no. I'll kill you.
Mm-hmm. But then Moses is allowed to go.
But then Moses is allowed to go further.
Right.
And actually, the elders go up on the mountain partway.
Yep.
Joshua goes up the mountain partway. Moses goes all the way up. So certain people, certain times, go closer. You mm-hmm. have. Even in the temple, you draw near only to a certain point, but the Levites go further and the priests go further and the high priest once a year on the Day of Atonement goes further still.
Yeah. Right?
So there's this sense of division along with, but it's never just division. It's also God meets us. And there's a way. Job spends the whole book lamenting that he can't find his way across that gap, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens at the end? God shows up. God finds his way across the gap.
Yeah.
And they have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So this, and interesting, the division here, because we tend to talk about division between God and man as an artifact of the fall. We sinned and there's this divide between God and man. This is the firmament is not an artifact of the fall.
That's right.
The firmament is a created division to, you know, God is telling us something about the way the world is.
Mm-hmm.
We are not like God.
Yeah.
In this way, we are below. We cannot ascend to be God. He condescends to be with us.
Right.
And that's built right into the structure. Like the heavens declare the glory of God. It's built right. We tend to think about that in terms of like sunsets and astronomy.
Yeah.
But also we're down here, they're up there. There's a very basic division here.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are above us, forever above us. There are things that are beyond us forever.
Yeah.
God is forever beyond us and chooses to come down.
Mm-hmm. And man is made, jumping ahead. We're doing a lot of this. Man is made from the dust of the ground. Like, we are earthly creatures, but we also know that when we die, our spirit separated from our body and our spirit goes to heaven, but it's not at home there. Right. Cause it's like, that's not.
Paul describes that existence as being naked.
Yeah.
And says that on the last day, you won't be, you'll mm-hmm. be reunited with your body, and the New Jerusalem comes down out of heaven
right.
to earth. Like, comes down.
It's not that the old Jerusalem goes up to heaven.
Right. Which in a way is a little weird, right?
Yeah.
If we were writing the story, like, one day, uh-huh. it's not hard to imagine, right? Jesus standing on Mount Zion and saying, one day this mountain will be elevated to heaven.
Uh-huh.
And you know what they tried to do at Babel, God will do.
Right.
It's not hard to imagine that, but that's not, in fact, what happens.
No. Earth, like,
the heavenly Zion comes to earth.
And Jesus being like God, God didn't need a physical universe to live in. You know, he's spirit, you know, all of that. And yet he created one, and then he was born into it as the Son of God. And so there is a permanent, you know, God has kind of permanently incarnated himself as a part of the created order now. And ultimately he, you know, the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven and coming to earth, completes the unity between heaven and earth for all time. But it's partly because Jesus is one of us. He is a human. And so heaven and earth have to be united at some point.
Yes. And the center of the New Jerusalem, right?
Right.
There's no temple because the Lamb is its temple. There's no need for sun and moon because the Lamb is its light. The Christ, the tomb was empty. Christ incarnate forever.
Yeah.
Is the bridge, is heaven coming to earth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Something else I wanted to talk about here is water. We have waters is figuring quite significantly here in the first. We have the spirit hovering over the face of the waters, over the face of the deep, and in verse 2 there. And now we have the waters above and the waters below. Why is there so much water? And why is it up above and below? Why we got water everywhere?
Good question. I mean, my first answer is, I don't know, because God wanted to make it that way. I don't know. As biblical symbolism unfolds,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that we quickly learn is water is life. But water is also, like, deep water is chaos and death.
Yeah.
And this is true everywhere in scripture with the blessings. Glory is good, right? But too much glory can kill you.
Yeah.
God is glorious. You seeing God's full glory, you're not going to live. The sun is glorious, right? But if you stay out in it too long, it's going to burn you. Water is life, but deep waters have gone over my head is not good news. And like lecturing that fellow on how water is life and he should be happy to be submerged in life is really not the need of the moment.
Yeah.
Too much of it can kill you. So God begins with something that is at once the source of life and chaos and death.
Mm-hmm.
And then renders it into order, both above, as we'll see, this the in the up down orientation of it, there's a horizontal division above the divider. God's going to render all of that, and below the divider, God's going to render mostly the rest of this chapter is about what happens below that divider.
Yeah.
With the exception of some bits on day four. Maybe with the exception of some bits on day four. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But we're starting below the divider where we're going to live is just water, is just chaos. And God is going to render that into order.
Yeah. Now we're we have the Spirit of God hovering over the face of the waters, or the deep, the abyss, mm-hmm. in verse 2. And then that kind of symbolism throughout scripture of the sea being a place of chaos and death. And then we have a sea around this. I think this is mentioned in Ezekiel and also in Revelation, and possibly some other places, where there's a sea around the throne of God in the upper chambers, but it's not there a place of chaos and death. It's a place. I think it says that it is clear as smooth as crystal. It's as clear.
Yes. Clear.
Yep. Perfectly smooth waters. Right. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, other than it seems like there is in the heavenly realm, there's an inversion where the sea becomes, instead of a place of chaos and death, it becomes a place of tranquility. Mm-hmm. And that's the, you know, and I think in Revelation it says there's no more sea,
yeah,
on the new earth. So the sea as a place of, you know, of chaos and death is ultimately eliminated from the new creation. And then there's this presence of God and the perfect tranquility that comes with that later on.
Well, and likewise, I don't know if you guys talked about this for day one, because I haven't listened to that podcast yet, but there's no more night.
Right.
Right. So we have night and day, then no more night. We have a division between heaven and earth, and then heaven comes to earth. We have a division between land and sea, and then there's no more sea.
Right.
There's a thing happening in Revelation that touches some of these fundamental things, that the way that God initially shaped the creation is not the way that it's ultimately going to be.
Right.
And creation grown up and graduated is going to be a different kind of place.
Yeah. And again, to return, like, this is not something that is being, that's a result of the fall that God is correcting. There is a, had the fall never happened, there's still a movement within the story that God is telling, right?
Yes.
Yeah. God is going to perfect. Creation was not ever, like, was not complete on day six, and then the fall happened. Even had the fall not happened, there would
be development.
Well,
and the flip side of that, because this is the place you end up if you think, and the church fathers explored this rather thoroughly, but if you think, oh, the creation was complete on day six and then the fall ruined it and we're just like getting back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to recognize these features in Revelation where we're actually getting back to something better,
yeah,
than the initial state of creation, then where that's going to take you is God needed us to fall in order to create the conditions for the new creation.
Right.
And the fall was actually a good thing. And like, oh, come on. No.
Like, yeah.
This was a disaster because we don't have a sense of story. God made an earth that was meant to mature. God made a creation that was meant to mature. He made us and we were meant to mature. And the movement of the story was always about that maturation process. We have made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that, like, you have a kid, you know, you have a kid that is meant to mature and then produce children of their own, right?
Yeah.
well, if the kid in question gets involved with another kid, and now we've got a 16-year-old who's pregnant, and the maturation process still needs to happen, right? Mm-hmm. This has not made it better.
Right.
This is not like without this without this sin, the maturation process would never have happened. Yeah. No, this is making everything worse.
Yeah.
But it still needs to happen. Uh-huh. And it's still going to happen. And the story that we could be telling is very different from the story that we will be telling.
Right.
About how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the situation that we're setting, that God is setting up here.
Yeah. Yeah, we know that God created, you know, a garden for Adam and Eve to be in, and it was a glorious garden, but it wasn't a city. Like there's to every element of creation, there's a positive direction. The sea's going on the new earth, the sea's going to be gone. There's not going to be a garden, there's going to be a garden city. God's not going to come down every once in a while. He's going to actually live among men. Like all of these things were the earth is designed for in Genesis chapter 1, but it's not complete. It's imperfect, not in the sense of sinful, but in the sense of incomplete.
It's meant to grow. Yeah. Well, and even us, like the New Jerusalem is not a nudist paradise. The Garden of Eden was.
Yeah.
Like this changes.
Yeah.
But of course it does. You know, no one blinks at a naked baby, but you're not meant to stay that way.
Yeah. All right. Any final comments on this, Tim?
I think
we hit it all.
That'll do it. All right.
All right. We'll see y'all on Sunday.